I'm Manila Chan. You're tuned into Modus Operandi. There are countless movies, comic books, TV shows about them. They range from Batman to Iron Man to the X-Men. Whether it's bulletproof armed exoskeletons to enhanced human bioengineering, the idea of the super soldier is one that the military-industrial complex has long had its eyes on. Ready or not, they're becoming a reality. Let's talk about it. All right, let's get into the MO. When you hear the term super soldier, what comes to mind? Maybe an Iron Man type character or Arnold Schwarzenegger in Terminator 2. Maybe a genetically modified human cyborg hybrid. While those things aren't entirely off the table, we're not there just yet. Not yet. But with dwindling military recruitment numbers across the U.S. in all branches of the military, the DOD wants to make who they've got, we'll make them last. Make soldiers more durable, if you will. Enhance human function and capability. That's where we are right now in 2023. In the U.S., under DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, there are a myriad of projects currently underway. Take Project Adapter, for example. That stands for Advanced Acclimation and Protection Tool for Environmental Readiness. It involves cyborg implants to alter soldiers' natural body functions or responses to make food that could make you sick from food poisoning by producing therapeutic substances or chemicals in the body to tell the gut not to respond to disruption. It's like a mini factory of good bacteria. Sounds like a minor or even useless thing, but when you're on the battlefield, you can't afford to be sick to your stomach or dehydrated. Food poisoning could literally cost you your life. And it's not just DARPA, not just the U.S. working on these tweaks to human biology that can benefit their battle readiness. Super secret development is underway for several military superpowers like China and Russia as well. In the U.S., subcontractors to the Pentagon are lined up in the private sector to develop these advancements, like enhanced night vision without goggles. This hot new sector has sprung up in the last decade called synthetic biology, which has seen billions of dollars pour in from both venture capital and the DOD. So, here to discuss this potential game changer in warfare, we'll bring in Professor Armin Krishnan. He's an assistant professor of political science at East Carolina University and author of several books, his most recent one called Military Neuroscience and the Coming Age of Neurowarfare. He's got expertise in international affairs and national security. Professor, thank you so much for joining us today. First, tell us a little bit about your book, Military Neuroscience and the Coming Age of Neurowarfare. What's it about? What prompted you to delve into this topic?
Well, it's about military applications of neuroscience in view of human performance enhancement, as well as human performance degradation, and also in terms of the use for intelligence and things like determining whether somebody says the truth or not. And so there are many different applications that are national security relevant. And yeah, my original interest in the topic came because of my earlier work on autonomous weapon systems. So I found that artificial intelligence research relates strongly to also neuroscience research. So artificial intelligence researchers try to build an artificial brain that is modeled on the human brain. And that's where the two fields overlap.
So let's go beyond psychological warfare, PSYOP, or even the information war. We have now entered the age of what many would colloquially call body hacking, or what the Pentagon calls synthetic biology research. One of many DARPA projects right now is called N3, Next Generation Non-Surgical Neurotechnology Program. It aims to provide soldiers with bidirectional brain-machine interfaces, which they call BCI. So in brief, BCI would enable neuropathways to communicate with external devices via an implant that talks to an external receptor. So in theory, the person can control like a swarm of drones just by thought rather than by computer. How and why would this be a desirable application for the military?
Well, the military has been interested in brain-computer interfaces since at least the 1960s. The general idea is to combine the high cognitive abilities of the human brain with the response times of machines. So by pairing a human brain with a machine or a weapon system, you can get the best of the two worlds. And that's the reason why the military wants it. And yeah, they have been working on different approaches to do that. So one approach was a project called Deep Brain Stimulation. So that's a DARPA project from 2013, which requires an invasive approach. So you have to drill holes into the brain to insert some implant into the brain. And that can be used for doing things like that are therapeutic. So you could relieve stress or pain. So it has been used on military veterans who have medical conditions. And obviously you could develop that further in terms of using it for a full brain-computer interface, so where you have a seamless connection between the human brain and a computer, so you could allow to control a computer or a machine by thought. And so that is quite powerful. And yeah, what they are now trying to do is to have a non-invasive technology, which can perform at least somewhat better than what they have already. So what they are using is EEG, but they're looking at something better than EEG. And again, that would be very practical if you could build it into some kind of helmet-like device. So you don't have to permanently modify your soldiers, and you do not have to take the huge medical risks that comes with that. So that is kind of the context why they are trying to do it.
A scientist called Robert Freitas, who is a nanotechnology researcher at the Institute for Molecular Manufacturing, has been working on artificial red blood cells called respirocytes. He says these nano machines would give humans the ability to, quote, hold their breath at the bottom of a swimming pool for hours or let someone sprint at top speed for at least 15 minutes without stopping to breathe. How might this be applicable to soldiers on the battlefield?
Well, of course, you would like to have soldiers who have greater endurance, who have greater strength, who can perform at the peak level for an extended period of time, who don't need to sleep much or don't need to eat. And yeah, anything that can accomplish that is obviously desirable. And one approach is called nanomedicine. So you can inject nanoparticles or nanobots into the body in order to achieve some performance enhancement. So I understand that it's related to improving the oxygen uptake in the blood, and that allows you to have greater endurance and to cope with far less oxygen in the environment. So that is quite real, and I think it's a near-term kind of capability that we have, so that we can use nanomedicine in order to have some performance enhancement, especially as it concerns things like oxygen uptake. I mean, that has been a technique in doping for quite some time. So obviously, nanobots themselves are more hypotheticals, the one described by Robert Freitas. So I don't know when that will be a reality.
And biotech is a massive field. an estimated $421 billion in 2022 alone, according to Statista. It's generally defined as the use of biological systems or living organisms to develop its products, sometimes called biologics. Meanwhile, the former U.S. Director of National Intelligence, John Ratcliffe, accused China of going one step further in biotech. He said China was using CRISPR technology to alter human genetics in order to create a physically superior soldier without offering any evidence, mind you. If we entertain the idea that this is actually happening, suspending any ethical arguments, given how costly a CRISPR program would be, is this concept even feasible? And wouldn't it take decades to develop an army of superhumans?
Well, I don't think they are necessarily looking at this time at human genetic engineering. So that would be to design a human soldier from scratch. So you would have to work with human embryos, and you would try to combine human DNA with some other potentially animal DNA to create a totally new type of organism. So obviously that would take a long time. So you would need 18 or 20 years to grow your soldiers. But I don't think that this is currently the issue. So what you can do is gene therapy or gene doping. So you can manipulate gene expression. So you can activate or deactivate genes. And that can be used for human performance enhancement. And that is an existing kind of technology. You can do it with a series of injections. So you can potentially insert some new genes into the body as well, into certain organs. And it's quite possible that the Chinese military is already working on this, and that the US military is also considering that very seriously. CRISPR technology can be generally used for modifying any kind of biological organism, including plants and also animals. So you don't have to necessarily go to humans for that. And according to James Clapper, who was Director of National Intelligence before Ratcliffe, he suggested in 2016 that CRISPR technology is low cost and easy, and that it could amount to a weapon of mass destruction if it was abused. So we would be talking about potentially modifying plants or animals and doing it in a malicious way in order to cause dysfunction. You could have organisms self-destruct. So that is a very dangerous kind of technology, because once you release something into the environment, it's very difficult to take it back, and then you can combine it with gene drives. So you could totally modify an existing species, and that would be indeed very dangerous. So what they are currently considering is working with mosquitoes, so genetically modified mosquitoes, and they can be used for delivering some neurotoxin or some biological agent. So that is a much more near-term threat.
All right, coming up next, has soldier body hacking actually existed for a millennia? We'll discuss it when we return with Professor Armin Krishnan. Sit tight, the MO will be right back.
When all truths seem wrong, when all rules just don't hold, and a new world is yet to shape out, disdain becomes the etiquette, and engagement equals betrayal. When so many find themselves worlds apart, we choose to look for common ground.
Донбасс вновь под обстрелом ВСУ. Националисты били из градов, использовали минометы. Снаряды рвутся и в ДНР под прицелом украинских вооруженных формирований. Донецк, там пострадали два.
Здесь и война, и под старость умру с войной. Никогда не думала, что случится такое. Никогда не думала.
Welcome back to the MO. I'm Manila Chan. With the advancement of AI systems on the battlefield, does that necessarily mean we are working towards bloodless wars? Back to discuss is Professor Armin Krishnan. Thank you for staying with us, Professor. Now, despite many of these discussions around CRISPR and China's alleged experimentation, not much talked about in the U.S. is this thing called Safe Genes Program, which sounds to me a lot like what CRISPR technology does. Now, from their website, under DARPA, it says this, quote, "The Safe Genes Program supports force protection and military health and readiness by protecting service members from accidental or intentional misuse of genome editing technologies. Additional work will leverage advances in gene editing technology to expedite development of advanced prophylactic and therapeutic treatments against gene editors. Advances within the program will ensure the United States remains at the vanguard of the broadly accessible and rapidly progressing field of genome editing." Then they go on to say, overall, the Safe Genes Program is creating a layered, modular, and adaptable solution set to protect warfighters and the homeland against intentional or accidental misuse of genome editing technologies, prevent and/or reverse unwanted genetic changes in a given biological system, and facilitate the development of safe, precise, and effective medical treatment that use gene editors. All right, Professor, given the advancement and use of drones and other non-human tech on the battlefield, why bother with trying to alter human soldiers? Why not continue the advancement of fully robotic warriors? I mean, why can't we take humans off the battlefield entirely?
Well, it's a similar argument as saying we don't need human soldiers because we have nuclear weapons. And so they represent totally different capabilities. So machines can do certain things better than humans, but humans can also do a lot of things much better than machines. So we need both types of capabilities. We cannot simply invest in just one type of capability and ignore all the other kinds of capabilities that might be needed. So there are certain circumstances where machines could easily outperform humans. So for example, for space weapons or fighting in the deep sea, these are not environments that are very suitable for humans, but that could be very suitable for autonomous weapon systems. At the same time, if you have to operate in a human environment, such as in a city, where you have civilians around, it's probably not the best option to rely on autonomous weapon systems for that. The risks are simply far too great. And although AI shows some promise, there are also some very substantial and inherent problems with AI. And so, for example, AI relies on neural networks that learn by themselves, and nobody knows how they evolve over time. And so you can't simply put an autonomous weapon system in the field and hope for the best. You never know how it would respond in a new type of situation. And obviously, any adversary will try to trick the AI into doing something stupid. So there is a counter AI. So you might be able to manipulate the data collection of the AI system and thereby distort the AI's decision-making and even trick the AI to attack own forces or civilians. So I don't think you can do away with human soldiers. I don't think that is ever feasible.
Now, on that note, as you just sort of alluded to there, do you ever foresee a future where of war where there are no human casualties, you know, both soldiers or civilian?
And what would be the point of that? I mean, war is defined as an act of force to compel the enemy to do our will. So you cannot have a war where you do not inflict some sort of pain on the enemy. Causing some financial or material damage is not enough. And humans will fight, and they will need to feel pain in order to stop fighting. And I don't think that it makes sense to have a war that is entirely fought by machines. So there will always be some human participation in war. At the very least, humans would be participating as collateral damage. So you will never be able to eliminate that kind of risk. And the only way you could have a bloodless war would be some sort of non-lethal technology that could mentally coerce or mind control an enemy population. And so that is a very scary possibility, but luckily it's not in the near future.
How long do you think countries have actually been genetically or at least chemically altering soldiers without the public knowing?
Well, I mean, there has always been an interest in genetically improving your soldiers. I mean, that the most basic technique is eugenics and breeding. So that is an idea that goes back to ancient times and the Greek philosopher Plato, who suggested that. And this has been also implemented in modern times. If you think of the SS breeding program called Lebensborn. So that has been going on for a long time, that you want to select the type of soldiers who have the best genetic conditions for the task. And we have now the technology to do genetic screening. So we would be better able to select people for certain jobs. And I think that is potentially already happening. So we are not always informed about these kinds of things, but the technology for genetic screening exists, and the next step would be genetically modifying. So that would start with gene therapy and other types of enhancement. And drugs are obviously a part of it. So soldiers have taken drugs for a long time in order to get better performance in combat. And that's just a reality of war. War is such an extreme situation that you need to overcome lots of physical and mental challenges. And anything that helps you with that, such as performance-enhancing drugs, are obviously a good thing for the military.
And for historical context, would you consider that this has actually been done for centuries, maybe a millennia even? I mean, take, for example, the fact that Vikings were known to eat psychedelic mushrooms. We're talking about shroomings here before some of the raids that they conducted. Or Nazi soldiers had been known to use meth to be able to fight on and march longer. Could these be considered a form of body hacking for soldiers?
Yeah, it's a very established method of human performance enhancement. And obviously militaries have used it for a long time, and the Prussian army was giving their soldiers cocaine in the 19th century. So that goes back a long time, and obviously we have now synthetic drugs like methamphetamine that was used by the Wehrmacht in the Second World War, and also was used to a large extent by the American military in Vietnam. So that is not something unusual. Obviously, you have some downsides that come with the drugs. So you can get highly irrational, unpredictable behavior as a result of those drugs. There's the risk of addiction, and there's the risk of other kinds of health damage that follows from this. So the use of drugs is not ideal, but it's a reality in war.
Do you think automated weapon systems are a competitor to the concept of genetically altered super soldiers, and that with the success of AI and autonomous weapons, that this field of research will drop out of the limelight and, you know, not receive as much funding in the future?
I don't see that happening at all. I think the potential of AI has been exaggerated a lot, especially recently. So there are lots of downsides to AI. I don't think that you can get rid of the human on the battlefield. What the US military is trying to do is to pair soldiers with semi-autonomous machines And so you would have soldiers directing a set of drones or other types of robots that would assist the soldier in the task. So that is clearly something that they would prefer to the possibility of just putting an autonomous system into the field and then hoping that it does the job as intended. So you might have a big problem with controlling autonomous weapon systems. So if you're dealing with neural networks, they might be able to develop the capability of circumventing certain programming, and then you might lose control over those machines. That doesn't amount to the threat of the machine becoming self-aware and fighting against humanity, but it can result in the machine doing something really stupid, and that can have very serious consequences. So you have to consider that autonomous weapon systems have extremely fast response times. So when something goes wrong, it might be too late for a human to effectively intervene in that. And you might get some knock-on effects that are uncontrollable. So the machine might destroy a satellite in space, and it might be an early warning satellite. The other side might consider that is the start of an all-out attack and might launch nuclear weapons. So that is something that is a real and a very scary possibility. And so I think we need to look for ways of ensuring that there is sufficient human control over those machines. I don't think it is a viable or reasonable option to let those machines just operate by themselves. You need to have humans that are nearby and that can potentially intervene in that if something goes wrong.
Professor Armin Krishnan, author of the book Military Neuroscience and the Coming Age of Neurowarfare. Thank you so much for that informative and, if I'm being honest, truly frightening conversation. Thank you. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Modus Operandi, the show that digs deep into foreign policy and current affairs. I'm your host, Manila Chan. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you again next time to figure out the MO.